This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kennison. It's 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday the 20th of December. And guys, it's 5 days to Christmas. We're coming up on the last weekend that you have to go Christmas shopping if you haven't already. How does it feel?
I've got my panic stations on a little bit. A little bit.
I think we've gone through this conversation.
Yes,
I'm not panicked at all.
Because you're not planning to buy anything for anyone because you're a Christmas
because
Grinch.
Because I am the BFM Christmas Grinch, everybody.
Yeah, you don't buy, you don't shop, you don't cook. So yeah, there's nothing to panic for. Only those who really care about their families.
Hey, I care about my family. I show my love in different
ways. The ones that are like really worried about it. You know?
Their families and their colleagues.
And their friends who they like.
Are you equating materialism to love and affection now? That doesn't sound very Christmassy to me.
No, I put cooking in there. That's effort.
So you bribery then?
No,
I'm supposed
it's not
to bribe
bribery.
My family with food and calories. Is that what you're saying?
It's not bribery. It's called sharing and also showing your affection.
I'm just gonna put it out there that I am completely open to bribery, especially when it comes to food and Christmas desserts.
Yes,
you know,
so
bribery by calories.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. But of course, to ease you into your weekend, because your weekend will no doubt be very rushed. If you're anything like Xiaoning or me, we do have lots of things lined up to talk about this morning. So what are we going to be discussing in the next hour?
So if millennials killed print media, will Gen Z revive it? This Reuters has got a little bit of an interesting report about how Gen Z is taking to print, but maybe not the print that we're used to.
And I'll be talking about a not so good habit that people should give up, but just can't seem to, even when they are financial penalties.
Okay, and if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we're going to be talking about privacy and why sometimes privacy at work is important, even if you don't have any secrets. Be sure to stay tuned for that after this song. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. That was Santa Claus is Coming to Town by Bruce Springsteen. Quite an interesting version of it. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Xiaoning and Roshan.
I'm sorry, that song was totally not Bruce Springsteen. It was an interesting take on it, though.
Getting you into the Christmas spirit.
Yeah,
Xiaoning,
for sure.
There are 5 days to the day. So this morning we're taking a look at an article in the Fast Company. Talking about, you know, why privacy at work is still important, even if you don't have anything to hide, right, from your colleagues. But especially,
of course, you always have stuff to hide from your colleagues.
Yeah, even, especially if it's like that last Tim Tam that you have,
stashed away in the corner.
So this is the age of open offices, right? And it's the age of large bullpens where basically no one can hide anything. You don't get physical barriers anymore. And this article just highlights, you know, actually that is important because you do sometimes need to close yourself off from other people no matter how extroverted you might be. So I was wondering, Xiaoning, because you used to obviously work in a corporate environment where you did actually have privacy in office.
My colleagues weren't 5 inches away from me. You guys are literally like 5 inches to the left, to the right, and maybe about 12 inches across me. So y'all are just like everywhere. But yeah, I did find it, and I still do find it a little bit odd. And it's not that I mind y'all so close to me, is sometimes when I need to concentrate, that's when I struggle. And I know the new generation thing is to put on your headphones. That's supposed to signal to everybody that I'm working, but I can't stand it. I'm not used to it. So honestly, if I really need to work, that's why sometimes you just don't see me. I just go into a quiet corner and try and finish my work quietly.
Yeah, but putting on headphones in our office, I've said this before, doesn't work because we work in a radio studio, which means that we're almost always having our headphones on. And so I think our producer Diana has brought up this tactic, right, which none of us have executed upon, which is to create a little flag that we can put on our computers. I think someone... Actually, if anyone wants to get me something for Christmas, that would be a great gift. A do not disturb flag to put on my laptop. Because as much as I like the concept of engagement that comes from an open office and the communication and the level of collaboration that you can get, maybe we've overvalued the amount of collaboration because it can be very distracting. There's so much going on. You know, if someone's desk in front of you is messy, if you're a type of visual person who needs a certain zen, that can
I throw you off?
Yeah, it can throw you off. Maybe we've overcorrected the other way.
I think we have overcompensated in a sense, because yes, the traditional office, you know, cubicles. I think to a large extent, cubicles. When I look at cubicles, the first thing that comes to mind is everything's very closed off. Mm. You know, you don't necessarily have that freedom. You don't feel encouraged to speak to your colleagues. But in an open office, I think that kind of goes in the opposite direction, and then you have to create your own boundaries. And if your office is one that, say, does really respect the headphone rule, then that's great, because you know the headphone is like an invisible wall, and everybody, you know, if they see that, oh, okay, you know, she's got her headphones on, she's got her laptop open, she's working, and if they don't disturb you, then I think that's fine. You do kind of get your privacy, kind of. But when that doesn't necessarily work, particularly in a radio station like ours, what do you do? You either squirrel yourself away in a quiet corner, step out of the office entirely. What else can you do?
I think offices, if they have an open office, they should also allow for many, many small discussion rooms where you could actually go and work and close the door. So if you don't want to be with people for whatever reason, you want some privacy, then you can book yourself one of these small little discussion rooms and then just type away furiously or have some time to think creatively, whatever you need, some time out. The only thing is, like in our office, there's like only one major, like two discussion rooms. And that's when you struggle a little bit. So I think if people plan open offices, maybe a few small discussion rooms is the way to go.
I think that's where we have to meet in the middle, right? We've overcorrected in one direction with the offices, and then we've gone the other way with the openness. Maybe we just need to come in the middle and get the designers to figure out a space that's both private and public at the same time. At least give people the option, the right to their privacy in the workspace. Because this article that we're looking at, this is in Fast Company, and the author basically cites four reasons why we need privacy at work. And one is you want to get ideas to take off, but you need that quiet time between you and your colleagues. You're not going to openly shout out a new idea, right? Sometimes we need a little bit of quiet space to incubate that idea. But also creativity, focus, and engagement. You know, you need to be selective with that. Mm-hmm. Not everyone's creativity flourishes in a open space.
Yeah, so I'm one of those people that even if I do have my headphones on and music blasting so I can't hear anything, I am very visual. So people walking past my line of sight distracts me. So what I tend to do if I need a quiet space in the middle of a bullpen is that we have this one very, very large wall pillar that's completely painted black in the office. And I'll just put on my headphones, turn myself to face the wall and put post-its up or just work facing the wall, which is, I guess, my version of putting up a sign to say, you know, do not disturb me. But do tell us what your coping mechanisms are if you need privacy in the office. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are going to be talking about the future of print next. But first, a few messages. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. That was Ready to Start by Arcade Fire, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Shanning and Roshan. Now, we talk a lot about Generation Z and just the changing consumer behaviours that come with different generations. And, you know, earlier we were talking about overcompensation in open offices. And I guess this can also apply to the different generations, because if you compare one after another, typically they tend to overcorrect in the other direction. And this is true also of the expectations for how Gen Z approaches print media. So there is some research to suggest now that print media does in fact have a future, because Gen Z will be the ones patronizing them. And it's quite an interesting subject, considering Gen Zs are also expected to be digital natives.
Yeah, but they're supposed to be less reliant and play with their phone much less, right?
And less trusting as well of online media.
Yeah, I hope print media is alive and well or has a second wind. Because, you know, I love turning those pages. it's something magical about it. Even if you see it online, it doesn't have that same feel. And I think about it, why people may be going back to media. Honestly, because those who have survived, who haven't shut down, are probably the best already. You know what I mean? Because it's the survival of the fittest, right?
Yeah.
So the less, you know, the magazines that weren't so great or the print that wasn't so great, that has just, you know, people didn't read it in the first place. And then with online, they didn't read it at all and then they just died, right? So what's left is the quality stuff, the niche, maybe niche and quality.
I think, again, like our previous conversation, there is a middle ground here. And that is, there is no space for commoditized time-sensitive media when it comes to print, right? That has to go online. You can't, if there's something breaking news today, you can't report it in the paper tomorrow. No one's going to wait for that. But value-added content, that is where I think we will see a lot of growth. Because, I mean, we're looking at a Reuters report here, and it's seeing more popularity among Gen Z with new sophisticated titles, very niche titles. And in Malaysia, with my friends who are in different scenes, like my friends who cycle, they buy those cycling magazines, the very niche ones that are easily maybe published once a quarter. And I like magazines. If I could afford it, I would buy the hard copy of the Bloomberg Business Week all the time. But I can't afford it, so I don't. So that's a different issue altogether. But even now, this article that we're looking at, I've printed it out in front of me because there is something to be said about, as Xiaoling said, the feeling of paper in your hands. This is why I still buy all my books.
Yeah, so I'm the kind of person that I do a lot of reading on my computer and on my various screens. But at the same time, I do agree with you when it comes to value-added niche content, because sometimes it's that niche content, it's the experience, the whole experience of reading that magazine, right?
It's been curated.
It's been curated for you. You like everything in it. You read it from cover to cover. You don't skim it like we sometimes do the newspapers, right? Because in the newspaper, you're maybe interested in one article out of 10, realistically. But when you have curated content, like say, so I enjoy reading The Economist. And if I buy an Economist or I buy a foreign affairs magazine, I will read it from cover to cover, every single essay, because it's all interesting. It's all value added. So I'm also curious as to whether, you know, and entertainment also does still have a place in print media and in magazines, because fashion magazines now are also, I think, suffering a little bit because
it's across the board.
It's across
right?
the board
because all print has suffered.
Yeah, because fashion magazines before used to also kind of do this whole time-sensitive reporting a little bit on fashion shows, on big events, on the Golden Globes and the Academy Awards. Now that's all online.
Yeah, but for me, the magazines have evolved also to kind of cater to the taste of the different readers out there. So since you're talking about fashion, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the 1980s and you look at it, let's say you take a very old 1980s fashion magazine, or worse, 1960s, you think, who wrote this? This is just totally like how women should be at home. It's like totally not feminist. So magazines have evolved. So even though you're a fashion magazine, the editorial has changed so much. It's about women at work, empowering women, fashion shouldn't be fast, the environment. No, so print that survives today are those that take up issues that are relevant, that are cognizant of what do people want to read. You know, you can't be stuck in a rut. I think then you will survive. So it's, you have to be niche, you have to be relevant, and also, of course, just well put together.
Yeah, I think the well put together is a good point, because when you have something that so we were talking about this Roshan in the break during the break, right? Because a user experience is not just important for a website. A user experience can also be important for print media.
Yeah, it's the difference between me liking how the physical FT is versus the New Straits Times or any other newspaper, right? It's the feel of the paper, it's the look of the paper, it's how comfortable it is to read. But you know, another thing we were talking about that is, magazines allow you, we've talked about curation. I think that's very important in mm-hmm. this world of, we have so much information at our disposal. Sometimes the thought of which information is correct or which is verified can be difficult to think about. So having a magazine or a particular curated set of physical stories disconnects you from the digital noise in the world. It gives that responsibility to someone else who you trust. right? The internet is full of fake news, let's just put it that way. But magazines are held to a different publishing standard.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows you to trust them a little bit more. And I think the pendulum is swinging the other way in terms of trust.
All right. Well, do let us know what you think about this. Do you think, what kind of print media do you still trust in? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on the 6:30 news now, and here to take you there is Paul McCartney with Band on the Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Blue Light by Block Party, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin-Mark, Wang Chaoning and Roshan Cunningson. Now, the Malacca Health Department has said that since early this year until about 5 days ago, they have issued 1,763 smoking warnings to eateries around the state. And so this was a number that was relatively surprising to me, considering it's only in the state of Malacca, and also considering the fact that we are about 11 days away from the supposed punitive enforcement of this smoking ban. Considering that we still have about nearly 2,000 warnings happening in one state alone, I'm like, doesn't look like eateries have really quite gotten on the bandwagon.
But, I mean, that's the Malaysian way, though, right? We wait till the actual punishment comes our way before we actually get our act together. Under the ban, just a refresher, those caught smoking in eateries can be fined up to, I think, a maximum of 10,000 ringgit or jailed for up to 2 years, while the operators, the restaurant operators who fail to put up no smoking signs, risk a fine of not exceeding 3,000 ringgit or a jail term of up to 6 months. There is also that the restaurant owners can be fined 5,000 ringgit if they allow smoking on their premises. I think once this is enforced, I think it'll be taken more seriously. That is, of course, if we don't get another postponement of it, because initially it was July 1st. And I think according to the health ministry, they wanted to go to the rural areas to kind of explain why this was a big deal and why they were doing this. And this is my favorite policy move so far by the government. I think it's great. It allows, it is my right to clean air in an establishment. And I love it. Without, I know there were a lot of cigarette smokers who were taking it to court. It infringed on their right to smoke. But I think one case was let go. I mean, not let go.
No,
they failed.
Yeah, they're going. There's still these seven individuals. They're going to the Court of Appeal to actually challenge this smoking ban at food outlets.
I mean, I respect their right to challenge that's the rule of law, right? I challenge your right to do that. But I don't think your right to pollute the air around me should trump my right to free air.
Yeah, it's the view. I mean, their point was that smoking ban infringed Article 5 and 8 of the Federal Constitution, which is Article 5 is the individual's fundamental right to personal liberty, while Article 8 is a person's fundamental right to equal protection before the law. So the High Court Judge Mariana Yaya dismissed this judicial review, saying that the Health Ministry had acted within its jurisdiction. And you're right. I think I have a personal liberty not to smell your horrible smoke.
Exactly. I think
and I also have the right to have equal protection before the law to not smell your horrible smoke.
Every time we talk about the law in that sense, I completely agree with you, Shani, because I mean, the default should be the right to clean air around you. Yes, there's always that argument that you don't have to go to that eatery, but if you don't enforce the law, then it mainly puts it on the back foot for people who don't smoke.
Yeah, okay. So I feel like there could have been some middle ground found, honestly, rather than just going ahead with a blanket ban with the practically no notice, right? Because I have smokers in my family, although I'm not one myself, and the struggle to find a place to smoke when it's real, because this is not a habit that you can kick with a lot of ease. You know, I know I have members of my family who've tried to quit smoking over and over again, and they never quite succeeded. So you know, when I first heard of the smoking ban, I was a little bit hesitant. I thought about, you know, places that I've been, other countries where they do have smoking bans. So places like Japan, where you do actually have dedicated smoking areas.
And they are very strictly enforced.
And they are very strictly enforced. And I thought, okay, well, you know, at least I'm sympathetic is basically what I'm saying. Because if you don't have, if you can't smoke in the eateries, which I will concede I don't think is a good idea, because eateries tend to be places also where families congregate. You don't want children exposed to secondhand smoke because it's not healthy.
Well, it's not healthy for anyone.
It's not healthy for anyone, but, you know, especially children, right? Because, but it's after a certain point that I feel like there could have been a middle ground reached that wasn't necessarily. That said, when it comes to, I do hope that the government will proceed with their punitive measures come January 1st, because I think there needs to be follow through.
Yeah.
You know, if you say you're going to implement fines, go ahead and implement fines, because that is your. This is a public health initiative that you're trying to propose. I don't like this. You know, oh, another 6 month postponement. Oh, another.
Then nobody takes it seriously.
Nobody takes it seriously.
Which is what's happening in Malacca, right? Because the eateries don't put up the signs anymore, and you know, people just after a while. The problem is people forget that there is this law that's coming into effect on the 1st of January, because it was implemented last year. So, you know, in people's mind, they're like, oh, you know, forgot already, can't remember. Well, and then the restaurants themselves also, apparently, according to some of my colleagues, they are already more lax, you know. They're already kind of like, which is also no good.
I don't know. I think also, because I was talking to someone I know who runs an establishment, and he was saying that there are particular rules for different places. So I think the health ministry needs to come out and really lay all this quite open. Are bars that are also serving food also under this purview, or are they not? Because that is a very complicated grey area.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are lots of these places that have become smoke-free, which have become have seen new consumers come to it, which has been very good for business, I think.
Well, to let us know what you think, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up on a few messages, and then we'll be taking a look at what's been said on the front pages of the newspapers. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Name For You by The Shins, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shouning and Roshan. Now, thanks very much for your messages this morning. We do have a couple of social media responses to the things we've talked about. What do we have?
Well, Ro chimed in and on WhatsApp, and he said, if murder is a crime, then passively killing someone with your cancer-causing secondhand smoke ought to be too.
Taking a hard line there, Ro.
Yeah.
But, I mean, point taken there.
Yeah, so we also do have a tweet on the same, on this, also on the smoking ban from Darth Vader, who says, because we asked, has the ban been effective over on Twitter? And he says, nope, it hasn't, because people expect it to be postponed again. On another note, our enforcement of laws is always a joke. And really, that is, I think, one of the major problems with the laws that we see. You know, it's postponed a month, postponed another month. Oh, it's still not happening. It's postponed again to next year. And it's like, okay, yeah, and it's never going
to
happen.
And I think that's why it's very important that they stick to this mm-hmm. deadline. And I think it's a good way to start off 2020 with not a non-postponement. I have a tweet here from Chip who says, I prefer open plan just because it's easier to find people. And I think that's why some of us don't like the open plan, because we don't want to be found by other people.
I just leave the office if I don't want to be found. I'm in
the same camp as you.
A lot of times I either leave the office or I go home to do work, which is, I guess, ironic.
Well, we are lucky because we can do that. Yeah. For a lot of other businesses, it's not possible. You have to stay in the office, right? You can't just, you know, work from home. So we are the lucky ones. Imagine you're in an open office and you can't leave it and you are desperately trying to finish the task. Now, that's the real challenge.
Indeed. So thank you very much for your social media responses. Let's also take a look at the newspapers. So I have the New Straits Times in front of me, and their headline or head quote, I think, that they've gone with is from the KL Summit, and it's Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. Alongside the quote, is Islam against worldly success, or is it Muslims themselves who prevent their countries from being governed well?
Hmm. Interesting headline.
Interesting, because that's the from the KL summit ongoing right now, I believe. We're hosting leaders from quite a few Muslim countries.
Yeah, and the Malaysian Reserve also has an angle from this KL summit, but the headline is "A Single Cryptocurrency for Muslim States," says Iran. And this is basically because Rouhani, who's our Iranian president, right, proposes the cryptocurrency as a common denomination for Muslims and to be used for trading. I mean, something that Tunem has also talked about, using the gold-backed like currency rather than using the US dollar. So looks like they're revisiting that idea again.
Yeah, and I guess in principle, I can see the appeal in wanting something that's not pegged to the US dollar. But also, I'm just hesitant about most of these
cryptocurrency
proposals, because I'm like, have you actually thought this through? Is this a proposal you actually want to move forward with, or is it just jumping on the bandwagon of cryptocurrency everywhere?
I think that's the important thing when we come to cryptos, right? Are you actually using cryptocurrency and blockchain properly, or are you just using the buzzword cryptocurrency, yes, like AI and big tech and all of that?
Big data. Well, if you think about it, Iran definitely wants this, right? Because mm-hmm. they're facing so many sanctions globally, and you know, they can't trade outside their country. They don't even have credit cards, you know, for example. So for them, yeah, this is something that they would want to consider.
I've got the star in front of me, and there's a little bit of backlash from the minimum wage. I think yesterday we talked about this, how in some cities, 57 cities, I think, and towns, the minimum wage would go up from 1,100 to 1,200. But some employers are saying that they don't have time to prepare and are warning of price hikes. Now, again, with all policies that we introduce, this is always the issue, right? The amount of time businesses have time to prepare for these policies, because these are not things that happen overnight. But at the same time, you also kind of always knew this was coming. It's about whether the government sticks to deadlines. And eventually, if you keep sticking to deadlines, people are going to expect it to happen.
Yeah, and this is the exact same thing that's happening with the smoking ban, right? So this this grace period where they allow business owners and in the case of the smoking ban, eateries to adapt. And I think that's a good idea, because you can't roll out a policy and the very next day expect people to know exactly what it's about and to know exactly how to comply with it. But at the same time, after a certain amount of time, like 6 months to a year maybe, you need to start pushing forward with the policies that you've announced. And if at that point it's been 6 months to a year after an initial announcement, my only response to businesses and eateries is to say, well, you should have known by now,
exactly. And on the headlines, Financial Daily is Najib constantly backtracking, because this is after two straight days of SRC hearings. That's the headline. And then another small little headline: Goldman Sachs in talks to admit guilt over role in one MDB scandal. And this is something we'll talk about at the 7 o'clock hour.
Can I also just chime in very quickly to say that the New Straits Times also has a headline about Dato Sri Najib Razak on page 7, and it is simply "Najib queried about missing chocolates." And with that, we are heading into the 7 o'clock news now, because that's all we have from the papers. But don't go away, because after that, we'll be bringing you the business end of the morning run. But first, here's some music. Christmas Time is Here by Kruang Bin, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.